the most powerful forces of good ever assembled. These are the Super Friends.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Let's go, Bub.
Up, up, and away!
All right, boys and girls, welcome to the first installment of Geek Legacy's Comic Corner, the inaugural podcast, if you will. I'm Jeff Muller, joined by my esteemed co-host, Tyler Waterman. How's it going, sir?
Excellent, excellent. Always good in the world of comics.
Good to know. All right. Are you ready to drop some comic knowledge and reviews on the inter-Google tubes?
Oh, the inter-Google tubes. Absolutely.
All right. Well, since this is our first episode, let's call it our first issue, if you will.
Oh, perfect.
Of the Comic Corner. How about we establish a little bit of background for the listeners, you know, our origin stories, so to speak. when did you get started reading comics? I mean, what's your first comic memory?
I honestly think my first comic memory is the little mini comics that were packaged in with He-Man figures. That was where I realized you could do pictures and words at the same time.
I remember those. All right.
They were pretty fantastic. And then from there, little kid me, it picked up Spider-Man, and it just grew from there. That was the first thing that clicked, and I just never looked back.
So Spider-Man was your first real superhero?
That was, yeah. Little kid me loves Spider-Man like adult me loves Batman.
All right, all right. And have you been reading comics ever since then?
Yep. During the Spider-Clone series, after Peter Parker was not the real Peter Parker, that burned me hard, and I walked away from comics for a while, but then came back and never, ever, I can't even imagine stop reading comics now.
All right, all right. Yeah, I kind of checked out of comics, so I don't remember the Spider-Clone stuff, but I know a lot of people still just butthurt over that whole thing.
Oh, God, I'm so butthurt.
Right. Yeah, I think for me, I mean, I remember it all started with, I got a reprint of Giant Size X-Men number one, and I got it at a convenience store on a spinner rack. And a lot of listeners probably won't even know what the hell a spinner rack is anymore. But I guess it was like an 83, 84, somewhere in there. But I distinctly remember just that the cover art and just how, you know, all the characters were jumping right out at you. And I was hooked, you know. And I'd always known about superheroes, but never from a comic book. It's weird because, you know, when I grew up, it was the Superman movie with Christopher Reeves, and, you know, Linda Carter was on TV as Wonder Woman, and you had the Incredible Hulk, and there was all this, you know, all this stuff going on in TV. So I didn't associate them as being comic book characters at first. They were TV and movie characters. And then I lucked into the comics, and I was hooked from that point on. And then, you know, I worked at like a local comic book shop and whatnot in the late 80s and early 90s. And then the 90s just burned me out. I just couldn't take another, you know, 15 variant foil covers with holograms and, you know, little, you know, crazy crossovers. And yeah, I checked out. I just couldn't do it anymore.
Are you telling me you didn't love belt pouches? Belt pouches as far as the eye could see?
Listen, Rob Liefeld and his belt pouches can suck it. No, I mean, I wasn't the styling so much that got to me. It was a... art became king and the stories kind of fell aside and everything was extreme. And a lot of the independent titles I had read, those companies kind of closed down at that time. And you know, I primarily was a Marvel guy then, you know, I only read like Batman and Green Arrow, I think, from DC. Everything else was Marvel. And they were just all, it was just too many crossovers. And it was too much money, too much of a monetary investment. When I was, you know, 19, 20, I couldn't do it. So I got out until the New 52 started back up, you know. So I'm relatively new coming back in, maybe only a year and a half, 2 years.
Further proof that perhaps the New 52 reboot may have actually been a good idea.
I think it was a great idea. I mean, it was the only way back in. I tried to get back into comics, I guess, about 7, 8 years ago. I remember going to a local comic book shop. And I was like, you know what? I had the itch and I wanted to. And I started picking up a couple of issues and thumbing through them. And it was so convoluted and confusing. I had no idea what the hell was going on, even with the simplest characters. You know, characters that shouldn't be crazy complicated. I felt like I needed to go take a college course just to catch up, and it just I wasn't willing to invest that kind of time. So yeah, I think the New 52 really hit it that way. You know, they made it accessible again.
They did. I love New 52 because anytime someone starts talking to me and I find out I love comics and they say to me, oh, I would love to start reading comics, where do I start? I always say, go pick up New 52. You can just start at number one with whatever guy you think is cool. And if you don't like it, you don't like it. But you don't have to feel, like you said, that you have to take AP Superman for 13 credits in order right. to understand what the hell they're talking about.
So before we rant and rave about, you know, what comics, you know, we're pulling out there and, you know, what we want to review, are there any big news, any events we want to talk about, Tyler?
Well, obviously the most important and probably biggest, honestly, probably the biggest thing to happen.
Okay, hold on. Spoiler alert.
Oh, yes, yes, spoiler alert.
If you're late reading your comics.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say if you haven't read Batman Incorporated number 8 or at least seen the cover or been on the internet in this course of the week and you're listening to comic podcasts, you probably are doing something wrong. But if you haven't read it, put your earmuffs on. Otherwise, everybody else knows Damian Wayne is dead. And Damian Wayne is very dead. Damian Wayne went out with a bang, but from all intents and purposes, it looks like he's dead. Now, obviously, like I said on the article I wrote about it for the site, the only thing that's permanent about death in comics is that nothing about death in comics is permanent. Yeah. But still, this one, it has its reasons to believe it's not. It's got the homage to Batman, rest in peace, which obviously Batman's not dead. But the way he died was pretty brutal, and the fact that they've already announced that at least all of next month, every issue of every Bat title, all 40 of them, is going to be a direct tribute to him. And you've got Greg Capullo's just empty boots with a Robin, which just that utterly killed me when I saw that today. We've got I believe it's the cover of either Detective Comics or Dark Knight with Batman with his hand on the tube with his costume. Like, oh my god!
They've already leaked the next month's covers.
All of the covers.
And oh.
Each one is more well to a heartless bastard like yourself who doesn't love Damian Wayne. You'll enjoy them, but for those of us who loved him like a son, we are. Each one is more painful than the rest. When it comes to news, that's definitely the biggest story right now.
So, I mean, how do you, I mean, obviously you taking it a little bit hard there, you know, I see the tear rolling down your face through the internet.
I'm not crying.
How cool is it that everyone's looking over at the Joker for months and then that story ends and everyone's like, oh man, you know, no one's dead. And then bang, the sucker punch from Grant Morrison.
This is not to take away anything from Scott Snyder or Greg Capullo, who are two of, I think, the greatest people in the comic industry right now, both as people and as talents. But Batman Incorporated is hands down the most important comic coming out of DC right now.
What?
Without a question. It's so, at least, if nothing else, at least when it comes to the Bat titles. The story, Death of the Family was a really cool story, and nothing but respect for the Joker and for everything that represented. But what Talia is doing with Leviathan is, I mean, it just blows it out of the water. It's one thing to tie up all the Bat folk in the outskirts of the Bat Cave and almost do something bad to them. It was cool, but it wasn't this. Understand that Batman Incorporated number 8 featured an evil clone. Well, it's kind of not exactly a clone, but basically a copy of Damian murdering Robin in Wayne Tower while Batman is trapped in a safe on the bottom of a pool. Like, this is huge. She's taken over all of Gotham in the course of 8 issues. Like, it's, and no one seems to recognize the fact that this is going on at the same time as these other stories. This is way up above and beyond what anything else is doing in any other Bat title. And if you're not paying attention to it and you like Batman stuff, you're just bananas. I can understand Grant Morrison is hard to read. You have to read every issue of Batman Inc. You have to read it like three times, but it's worth it. It's totally worth it, because what Grant Morrison does with Batman is unlike what anyone does with anyone else, and it's huge. You got to be a part of it.
All right, all right. You know, I picked up that one issue just because, you know, I heard the news, and I don't like Damian at all. You know, I was reading Batman and Robin for a while, and just he was just so petulant, and it just was like it. You know, I've had this argument with people before in the past that I read Batman and I love Batman, always have. And I read Detective, even though it's kind of slipped a little bit lately. But I started off reading, you know, almost all the bad titles, you know, that came out of the New 52, and I trimmed a bunch off because, to me, every extra component of the Bat family devalues Batman as a hero to me. So it's I know we're talking comics, and you have to suspend disbelief to believe that guys can bounce bullets off their chest and fly and everything else. But Batman and, to a certain extent, Green Arrow are the only two people that have zero superpowers that can exist in that world. And every additional Bat disciple or Bat family that does the exact same thing that Batman does, beats the crap out of everyone, can dodge bullets, everything else, just devalues, in my mind, this how special Batman is as a character in that universe. So I started avoiding them all. But I picked up the issue, and the art was really cool, really dug it, had an interesting vibe, and I do like Grant Morrison as a writer. But I'll agree with you that Talia is a villain that's way above the caliber of the Riddler and the Penguin and Joker. There's no gimmick to her.
No.
She is an evil, evil criminal mastermind that runs a network around the world of just horrible things. Horrible things. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty frightening for Batman if you think about it. You know, he's not taking on a person. He's taking on a worldwide crime syndicate, essentially, right?
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
That up until a couple months ago, no one even knew existed. And it is everywhere. It's everywhere. I mean, I know you're not reading the other issues, but there are other ones that break it down. There's one panel, I forget, I want to say it may have been issue 5 or 6, where it's just like, it's just a random cut of the, like, basically the street in front of Wayne Tower, and there's little Leviathan logos on, like, 14, 15 people, and it's like the hot dog vendor and security guard, you know, no one knows, but they're everywhere. She has the whole city, and who knows what else? And it's children, it's mothers, it's teachers, it's normal people. It's not, like, spies or whatever.
Cool. Well, maybe I'll stick with the book. I don't know, just to kind of see where it goes. But it definitely was a shock. I don't think anyone saw it coming.
No.
Well, definitely. Until it got leaked 2 days early by DC in a cheap attempt to get people to buy books.
It worked. I saw reports. It was going on eBay for like $40-$50 yesterday.
Oh, my God. It's like the 90s all over again.
Hey, man, go ahead. Sell your stocks. Sell your bonds. Buy comics. They're totally going to be worth it. It's your investment.
Stop now. Before I have an aneurysm. So what else is going on in the news?
The other big thing on the what I like to consider the exact opposite side of DC is the Lantern side of DC, which I'm also a huge fan of. I love Green Lantern and all things to do with it. Well, pretty much all things to do with it.
Except for Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah. I want to defend that movie so bad, but I can't do it. I just can't do it. So Geoff Johns, after I think it's been like 100 issues, and after literally reinventing the character, I mean, that's Geoff Johns' mutant power, is to take characters that people never thought they could think were cool, and he makes them cool. He did it with Aquaman. I mean, for God's sake, based on the reviews, and the first issue wasn't that bad, he might do it with Vibe. Like, I don't know how he does it, but he can make you take characters seriously you couldn't before. And before he jumped on, when you said Hal Jordan, people said, isn't that the guy that can't fight yellow? You know, like, he made Green Lantern cool. But he's calling it quits after issue 20, which is going to be basically about June. Geoff Johns and Mankey will not be working on the book anymore. Actually, every single Green Lantern team will switch up, which is basically, from the sounds of it, I mean, I haven't seen the exact time frame, but it's got to be after Wrath of the First Lantern. And it's interesting. the one book that's getting a creative team that I'm really, really looking forward to is New Guardians, which New Guardians I thought was one of the best surprises in the Green Lantern saga. I'm a huge Kyle Rayner fan. I think he's probably one of the least appreciated Lanterns, and that book is really good, and especially now that he's the White Lantern, and from the looks of it, that's going to stick. I don't think that's going to end anytime soon. That's getting Justin Jordan as a writer, and Justin Jordan is the man. So I'm real excited to see what he does with Kyle. And it's also getting Brad Walker, who has been doing Action Comics, and the art in Action Comics has been fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to that. But really, everybody, all of it, I'm always down for shaking things up. I like the fact that they're shaking up all the books at once. I really think that's going to be exciting. I think it needed a... It's not that Green Lantern was suffering at all, but it needed a change. I mean, even when you have somebody as great as John's at the helm, you need somebody. You can't do it forever. You got to switch it up.
All right. Well, how about we lay out for the listeners out there some reviews of the books that come out in the last couple of weeks? I know I have a pretty healthy pull list every week, and I know that yours dwarfs mine. I'm not quite sure how you do it.
It's not easy buying all the bat books.
Oh my god, that's a lot of bat books every single week. It seems it's ridiculous, but hey, to each their own. So we've been talking a lot of bit about DC, so I'm going to switch it up a little bit and hit up a Marvel book for my first review this week. I want to hit Thor: God of Thunder number 5. Look, I hold a few truths as incontrovertible. Right? Number one, Dick Grayson is the only true Robin. Right? Number two, Wolverine is in three times the books he should be.
At least.
Okay. Number three, Darkseid greater than Thanos. Enough said. No argument.
Yeah, I could side with that. I'll agree with that. Yeah.
Number four, Hawkeye will always be inferior to Green Arrow.
Now that's something we'll debate another day.
Sir, I said incontrovertible truth. And number five, Thor: God of Thunder is the best Marvel title out there. Hands down, dwarfs any other book coming out. It's fantabulous. It's the perfect blend of everything, from the writing to the art to the lettering. I mean, when's the last time you've ever looked at a book and not only recognize the lettering, but thought, that is really cool. Just every aspect of that book is meticulously planned out and beautiful. Are you reading it?
Oh, yeah. How could you not read that book? I mean, I'm not even a huge Thor guy, but that book is just... It's not just that the art is so great. It's also just the concept of the different times that you're
covering. Oh, I know.
It's so cool.
I mean, Jason Aaron's pulling off something that most writers fumble. I mean, he's intertwining timelines, three timelines, past, present, and future, seamlessly, and they're all telling parts of the same story. I mean, it's not like you're like, oh, by the way, this happened back then. What happened back then, as you're reading what's going on in the past, is still driving the story in the present forward. It's an amazing feat of writing, if you think about it.
It really is. And also, King Thor is so badass.
Yeah. Yes.
So badass.
And I kind of like young Thor with the axe and everything.
I've always really liked young Thor. I've always found the young, impetuous, not in Mjolnir wielding Thor to be more interesting than the constantly just swinging my hammer Thor. He didn't really have that special oomph. He just had to be a tough f***er, and he does it, and it's great.
Now, I mean, I admit I've been a Thor fan forever. He's one of my favorite Marvel characters. And, you know, I consider the Walt Simonson run on Thor as to one of the, you know, one of my Bibles in comics.
Nice.
You know, but this run is replacing that for me. Like I these first five issues, I can't wait until the next one comes out. And it's rare that the villain is almost more interesting to me than what's going on with the main character. You know, this God Killer character they're pulling in. You know, the more they delve into him, fascinating.
It's so awesome. Such a compelling villain.
And the other cool thing, five issues in, a conversation with Iron Man for two panels, mm-hmm. the rest of the Marvel Universe could doesn't exist. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in this book. You can read it as a standalone, and nothing going on around it right now matters.
Yep.
Which, in the land of crazy crossovers and every character joining every other book, is kind of refreshing.
Yeah, there's no Wolverine here.
Oh, thank God. So anyway, I give it, you know, three thumbs up. You know, if you aren't reading this book, you fail at comics, in my opinion. So what about you? What are you reading and reviewing?
Well, if we're gonna start off with Marvel, I've got one as well. I was absolutely, now this is a book that I anticipated liking to begin with, but was really blown away by how much I liked it, was Nova. I'm a huge fan of the cosmic side of Marvel, and being a huge Green Lantern fan, the Nova Corps is no different. It's just the Green Lantern Corps, just you get helmets instead of rings. I mean, it's even a corps, for God's sake. But I've always found it cool. I've always liked everything cosmic, mostly because with the Marvel cosmic side, because it wasn't so mainstream, and I hope that this doesn't go away now that it's getting big. Because these characters, it wasn't Spider-Man, it wasn't Wolverine, you never knew what was going to happen. People died, like, frequently, and then they came back, and then they died again, and there's this and that, another thing, and I don't mind that as much when it's characters where you don't, it's not like Damian Wayne where I gotta lay here at night and weep myself to sleep because there goes my favorite characters. When Star-Lord dies, you're like, oh, damn, Star-Lord, he was cool, and now he's dead, but it's not the end of the world. Nova, though, I expected, all right, we're going to have some cool Nova action. I know it's a little kid now, but, like, that's fine. I'm down with that. But for it to instead be this really dramatic story about this, I mean, and we'll find out more about how he got to be where he is, but his father being, you know, basically a drunk ex-Nova Corps member that no one believes besides, I mean, clearly his wife believes him, and, I mean, the daughter believes
him.
Yeah, maybe. She at least defends him. But I just didn't expect it to go in that direction. I really thought this was just going to be your classic comic book story about here's this kid, he probably has a rough life, and then he finds his dad's helmet, turns into a Nova, you know? And I was down for that. But for this to be the way it is, and especially, I remember you said when we talked about it before, you felt the Guardians cameos were a little bit forced in it.
I did.
I can see that. I mean, we're going to see a lot of that with the movie coming.
I know.
Gotta make sure we know who these people are. But at the same time, that last panel of Rocket Raccoon in the hospital bed just being like, we got to talk about your dad. That was cool. I mean, that makes me, I will be here for issue two, and I will be here beyond, I have no doubt. And what I also really liked is that they kind of broke the whiny kid stereotype. He wasn't, he was a little brash, but at the same time, like, he was a good kid. You know, he was trying to help his drunk dad and so on and so forth.
He was strong from the get-go, which is rare. It's usually a kid that's broken or beaten down and then finds his power. But he was already, you know, he was doing work for his dad and covering up and pulling janitor duty at the high school Marvel, when it does humanity, I think is where they do their best work. You know, stories like that, harken back to the old days of, you know, like Miller Daredevil and, you know, those things where they delve into what's happening while the costume's still present, but what's happening at the human level. The stories are really compelling, and I think Nova really hit that out of the park. I was shocked. I loved the book. You know, I'm definitely in for issue two at least. You know, if it turns into the Rocket Raccoon special, I'm probably checking back out. But, you know, I always thought Nova was a cool character. You know, the art was really good and the story was good. So I'm in.
Yeah, no, I was real happy with that. Both that and Guardians of the Galaxy, the 0.1 or whatever this week, I have really high hopes for where Cosmic is going. It's a side of Marvel I don't think they ever got enough attention for, and I'm really stoked that it's getting attention now.
Now, do you think they're trying to tie some of this in with the next touted event, you know, the Infinity event? Do you think they're going full-on cosmic since, you know, they're bringing Thanos into the picture?
It's hard. It's so hard to tell because we have to do Age of Ultron first.
Marvel's already looking past that. Come on.
I can't believe that right now with a simple Google search I can be reading pages of Age of Ultron like number 4. Like I honestly feel like I saw a preview for like issue 8. Like
Jesus.
I love Marvel and I love crossover events. I do. And they're not always great, but I'm always down to read them. But this one, I just feel like I've already read it, and it hasn't even started yet. We're months away from it starting, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm already sick of it. Like, I'm already sick of Ultron. And the thing about the Age of Ultron is I was actually really looking forward to that when they like teased it years ago. And now I've had it slapped in the face so many times that I don't really care. So we'll see. I'm curious if Infinity is going to be strictly cosmic and maybe, you know, a little bit of overlap. And that I actually would prefer. I'd like if maybe they have those two, because otherwise we're just going to, is that how we're going to do crossover events now, Marvel? It's just going to be one after the other, after the other, after the other, because I'm out.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. I like it when there's summer events. I don't want it to be every other month. There's some other huge thing where everything will never be the same, because I don't want it. I don't need it. I don't need that in my life. I don't want to have to, as you always put it, I don't want to have to go buy Red She-Hulk in order to understand the storyline to the characters I actually give a damn about.
So let's switch gears and talk about DC for a minute, if you have a second. I know.
Absolutely.
All right. So Flash number 17 came out. Another book that I'm always just waiting for, primarily for the art. You know, I have a fondness in my heart for writer artists, and what, you know, what Francis Manapul is doing with that book is spectacular. Bussolato's colors, I'm probably butchering that name, but colors are spectacular as well. On par with probably any book out there in terms of, you know, you could make the argument it's some of the best art in comics today. It's got its own unique style that's very, very complimentary to the character itself, I think. And I think that's really why I love the book. The story, you know, I have to admit, is sometimes it's a little ADD for my taste, which it's funny when you think about it, because, you know, the way Flash is being written now, with him being able to see time streams and every possible outcome to everything, it kind of fits the character, but I don't think that's the intent. I think it's just, I don't know. I've been noticing something about a couple of the DC books, and I don't know if you have or not, and specifically Flash. And up to this month, it's been a low page count book. Like, that book usually clocks in at 17, 18 pages, as opposed to, like, this month's issue was 22. You know, compared to most books, which are now 22, 24, sometimes 26 pages if we're lucky. But the constant 17 pages, of course, you flash through the Flash book, you know, it's funny when you think about it. Right, I know. But the stories feel rushed. And they cram so many, like, his rogues gallery is so over the map, and they've been throwing everyone in there every month. I feel like if I had another two or three pages every month to slow the story down enough to get some characterization out of it, I probably would be enjoying it more than I do. I mean, I'm not saying I hate the book. It's still one of my definitely top five DC books, but it's getting a little old having to follow, you know, 50 villains in every single issue. I don't know.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I like the book too. Honestly, sometimes I feel like I am most excited just to see what the title page is going to be in that book,
because right.
It's always so ridiculously elaborate. But I agree, there are too many things happening in that book. And this is the thing, I really like super speed as a superpower, because it's one of those powers where you can you can do a lot more than just run fast.
Oh, yeah.
And so I like that aspect of it, but I kind of feel like they're going a little too far with it. I'm down for examining the Speed Force. When you bring me to this crazy Speed Force world with, like, things that are taken at a time, and now it starts to get a little lame. And also, Gorilla Grodd sucks.
Oh, I'm shut sorry. Your face.
Gorilla Grodd sucks.
Oh,
super
my God.
Super smart, angry monkeys are not an interesting villain. I'm sorry. DC wants you. I don't know what it is about DC, and it's been, I'll give them credit, it's been there since the beginning. Oh. DC really wants you to be into gorillas. With good gorillas,
that's
bad
right.
Gorillas, it doesn't matter.
And rightfully so. I will fight you over this, sir. Oh, my
Today
God.
Today I learned about your intense love of gorillas.
Angry monkeys are awesome. But no, come on, Gorilla Grodd is it's so just out there. It's It's so, but you were just raving about Rocket Raccoon.
Whoa. I was not raving.
A talking raccoon with a blaster gun.
But at least he's from space. Actually,
and
I don't
Gorilla
know.
Grodd's from the jungle, where he belongs.
I don't know. I think for me, and you know what it is, too? It's the contrast of the way that he's taken the Rogues Gallery, that Flash's Rogues Gallery, and made them into what they are now, where their powers are real, and they're more of a curse than a blessing, and all that stuff. That's so interesting to me that then you just take Gorilla Grodd wants the Speed Force, and it's just like, this doesn't need to be here. This is a story that could be about the Rogues, and we could do this Gorilla Grodd thing later, and that's fine, I'll endure it. I'll bring bananas. But at the end of the day, we don't need to do both these at once. And you're right, it could be intentional, it might not be. I don't think it is as intentional as they would like us to think. But we'll see. I am happy that this issue, I noticed it as well, it did have a full page count. And I don't care about that so much from like, I'm spending my hard-earned money and I want 22 pages. But I do care about it from a story perspective. And in a comic, two, even just one extra page sometimes can make a world of difference.
I mean, I wonder if that's just the nature of it being a writer-artist, you know, doing all the work themselves, you know, every month.
Especially with art that detailed as well. You know, that detailed. I mean, besides maybe Humberto Ramos, I don't know that there is a more definitively distinct style in comics right now than him. Like, Francis Manapul is different. He's different than anyone else. He's like a Lenil Yu. Like, you see the art and you know who exactly drew that. No, I like it. I like it. And we'll see. I have high hopes. I would call it in my top. Well, I don't know. It's hard for me with all my bad books.
Batman takes up, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and probably through 12.
No, I don't include Batwing.
Oh, Jesus.
No one includes Batwing.
Someone does.
Yeah, someone must be buying it. It's one of the few books that hasn't been canceled from DC in the last 2 months. Going along the same DC vein, a book I wanted to talk about for sure was Justice League 17. And not just from the perspective of that book itself, but really kind of that was the essential conclusion to Throne of Atlantis, which I think when we talked about this before, I think you hit the nail on the head. Throne of Atlantis was a crossover event done right. Just done over a handful of issues in two books. If you're reading Justice League, you're probably reading Aquaman. If you're reading Aquaman, you're definitely reading Justice League.
Oh, yes.
So you're not being forced to buy a book you don't want. And right. The story is good. Was it very unique? Absolutely not. I've lost count how many times somebody has attacked, whether it's been Namor, whether it's been Akuma, whether it's been Orn, whether it's been Aquaman himself. Somebody's always attacking from the ocean in comics, and it's always the same exact story. But for some reason, it's okay, and I don't mind. But this was good. It was everything you want from a crossover event, nothing you don't. Epic battles, all the League involved, you know, people, two leagues involved by the time this thing was over. It really was everything you needed, nothing you don't. And I gotta say, one of the biggest surprises to come from it, especially in Justice League 17, they made Ocean Master a cool character. Orm was cool, and the whole, I almost questioned the logic behind it, and not only saying it from a character perspective, I get why they did it from a story perspective, but Aquaman having him imprisoned on Earth is going to be a big deal someday down the road, without a question. The look on his face when he is just like, I yielded the throne, you can't leave me here, like, I'm not even asking you to not imprison me, just imprison me under the sea, and for him to just be like, nope, you're going in that cell, I'm sorry, brother, like, I thought that was really compelling. There are some times where you can see a villain who really didn't even necessarily want to be a villain. I mean, he thought he was attacked. You know, after when those missiles hit, all he knew was the surface people finally attacked my people and I'm going to come get some. And so he never came in with an evil intent. He didn't go out with an evil intent. He yielded. He did what he needed to do. And at the end of the day, he kind of got boned. And I have a feeling someday down the road, whether it's just an Aquaman or even if it's another sort of crossover event, that's going to be a big deal. And I'm looking forward to it. That's not a character I thought I would give a crap about. And by the time, and again, I guess Jeff Johns, there you go. once again, he makes somebody that you, when was the last time two people sat on the internet and talked about Ocean Master?
Definitely.
He did it again. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes of that.
Now, did you take any issue? I heard a lot of people kind of kvetching about this a little bit, you know, after issue 16, Ocean Master being able to just so easily take out everybody in one fell swoop. I don't know. I like Justice League. It's not in my top five DC books. I mean, I read it because I like the team book. I like the ass and I like the art. I enjoy it. I don't look for, it's not on my, I got to read this first, you know, list. But I felt that so far it's been very, all over the map in terms of getting the feeling for the power levels of the heroes. Like, so the Justice League is supposed to be the flagship, you know, big, you know, hero team in that universe. And Ocean Master whips their ass like that, takes out Superman and Wonder Woman. And then, now, I don't get me wrong, you know, I argue with Stephen Janes, you know, from the site, you know, about this all the time. I love Aquaman. I think this run of Aquaman is spectacular. I think he's turned back into a great character again. And I think people don't give him enough due for his power level.
Him and Martian Manhunter are the two most powerful, least respected characters of all time.
But Ocean Master took them all out, and Aquaman beat the crap out of them. I felt like it felt imbalanced to me. Like, for the sake of the story, you know, they ratcheted the power level up of this, you know, really no-name villain, and then toned everyone else down and made them look like bitches. I don't know.
I
wasn't sold.
I agree. I don't think pulling them underwater is the way you beat the Justice League. Otherwise, everyone would just push the Justice League into the ocean and hope for the best. Like, I agree, it was definitely convenient for the story, but I almost felt like Throne of Atlantis didn't even need to be a crossover event. It really could have just been the thing going on in Aquaman, and the Justice League were there. And I feel like it was definitely a vessel to get other things across, like Cyborg losing another human part, like that. In DC's desperate attempt to get us to like start with Cyborg, which, guys, just stop.
Stop.
Just stop it. Please. It's not happening. I'm sorry. He's such a... Or if you're going to do it, give the man a personality. My God, he's just... I'm so sick of that. But that's a rant for another day. Yeah, it wasn't perfect by all means. But you know what? There's going to be a lot of times where people take out these heroes and you're just like, what? How did that happen? And you just got to be... I guess you just take it with a grain of salt and you go with it. So we'll see. I don't know. But I liked it. At the end of the day, you're right. Justice League's not in my top five. It should be a book where I feel like I need to read that right away. And it's not. And it really never has been. I don't know. In the beginning, in the New 52, like the start, when that was the first one to come out, oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, also Geoff Johns and Jim Lee, yeah, you're going to be there. But there's something about that book where you can't help but feel like something is missing. And I don't know. I think what it really comes down to is that the league is still finding its own. It's still a very young, very new league. And I think that's part of what it is. And we're very used to the Justice League of old, you know, where it's like the Avengers, where you just say the name and you're like, whoa. And the Justice League name still holds that to me. But to the New 52 universe, the world doesn't revere the Justice League like the Marvel Universe reveres the Avengers. The people still fear and don't trust them, and I think that's part of it.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, there is something missing from that book, and I think it's personality. There's no... It's almost comic book by numbers now. It's very clinical in its approach, and it's just, you know, very basic, you know, three-act structure storytelling. There's no... You know, when it first started out, there was some interesting interplay between, like, you know, Green Lantern when he meets Batman for the first time and everything. And you were like, oh, this is going to be kind of cool. And now it's just fallen into just color-by-numbers comic books almost. I mean, not that it's bad. I mean, that...
Nope.
it's good to have those types of books, and you know, they're great to just read and smile at, and like, oh wow, they fought, yay. You know, Superman punched someone, Batman scowled, ooh. You know, but it at the end of the day, I think, you know, for more mature readers who want a little bit more depth to the story, that book just doesn't hold up.
So we'll see. I mean, I still have a lot of hope for that book, and I'm now with another Justice League title. We'll see if that doesn't help or hurt. But right, it's not in the top five. It's definitely not in the top. It's a popcorn comic. You read it for right. Shits and giggles, and you enjoy it while you're there, and you forget it when you're gone.
Yep, that's a good way of putting it. That's a good way of putting it, I think. So I guess the last book I want to talk about, I want to roll back over to Marvel for a minute and talk about Daredevil number 23. Now, Daredevil, I want to preface this. Daredevil has been one of my favorite characters since as long as I can remember. I've always been a Daredevil fan. Love him. In fact, I even don't mind the Ben Affleck movie. You know? No, I mean, it was what it was. It was, you know, it was an attempt. It wasn't terror. It wasn't Green Lantern.
I would watch Green Lantern 1,000 times before.
You
I would
are a crackhead.
Box art Daredevil.
Oh my god! Shut your face. No. So, but anyway. So I love Daredevil, but I'm on the verge of kicking this book to the curb. I just don't know. I the art is killing me. I mean, it isn't that Chris Samnee's bad. I just don't feel that the style matches the book. It doesn't work with the character or the story that Mark Waid is telling. I look at the art and it just feels very disjointed from the story, and I've been putting up with it for, you know, I guess what, the last five issues or so, and just I can't. The art's just killing me. And then, man, speaking of the story, I mean, I love Mark Waid. I really do. But if I see Stiltman show up in that book one more goddamn time, I don't know what it is lately with this fascination that writers have across the big two of trying to breathe life into the most obscure, most ridiculous characters they can find. I mean, it's happening everywhere right now. You know, from Rocket Raccoon, you know, a ridiculous. He's getting his own movie, for God's sake, you know. And Stiltman has shown up, and don't quote me, but I'm pretty sure three of the last five issues.
Now, am I the only person that remembers Stiltman getting killed by the Punisher by a bazooka to the nuts? Am I the only person who remembers that?
Probably. I do remember Mike Zeck Punishers killing people left and right, but I don't recall Stiltman being one of them. But it probably was after I checked out, you know, after too many belt pouches and I took my hiatus. But I mean, it's just, I mean, I like where the story is going. I mean, Daredevil is always the same. It's always, he's very Batman-like. How much tragedy can we just heap on this person until either they break, and then they have an amazing story run, like Born Again, like Frank Miller's, you know, Born Again, you know, it's just absolutely fantastic, or they just bear it, and you know, just you just admire the hero for being able to live, you know, in the face of just all this tragedy, and you know, now they're giving Foggy, you know, cancer, which is just, oh man, you can't get rid of Foggy Nelson.
No.
I don't think Daredevil works without Foggy. So you know they're not going to kill him. You know he's not going to die. So I just feel like it's a cheap ploy. It's a cheap tactic. You know, while I felt it was a cheap tactic back when, you know, back in the day when they gave Karen Page AIDS.
Yeah, good example.
But it worked. In the end, it worked because they got rid of her. You know, she died. They're not going to kill Foggy. I don't know. I just feel that the combination of everything that's just been sitting on that book for 3 to 4 months now, it pains me deep down in my heart to say it. But I think if Daredevil 24 isn't a step in the right direction, I'm going to check out for a while. I don't know. Do you read Daredevil? Are you a fan?
I do. I stopped reading it probably 7 or 8 issues ago. So I haven't, I yeah, I've missed Stiltman, and I've missed, and that's the thing, is that I actually was going to get back into it, and I saw the art, and it's not, again, it's too bad, because Mark Waid is fantastic. He's fantastic. All the in-books, Incorruptible, Irredeemable, all that stuff, all those were fantastic. What he touches turns to gold, but you need that art to be there, too, and you're right, it's very... It's kind of like with Batman Inc. You see that style wouldn't work in every comic, but you could see how it worked in that one. This is the exact opposite. These are two creative minds that aren't on the same creative page, and it turned me right. When that book rebooted after Shadowland, I was really into it, and I'm not a huge Daredevil guy, but I saw that and was like, yeah, never mind, I'm not coming back. Like, no thanks.
Oh, yeah, the art for like the first 15 issues of the new run were spectacular. Everything
about that book was great.
They switched artists, I think, they had someone who went for two or three issues and another person went for two or three issues. But I don't know why they settled on Samnee. I mean, I'm sure his stuff would work better in another book, but it's just killing me right now.
Well... No, that's I feel for you on that one. I'll mix it up here. I'm gonna go away from the big two and actually do something that came out just yesterday. I'm a big fan of Image. I was a big fan of Image in the '90s, and I'm still a big fan of Image now. And they just dropped a new book. It's called Five Weapons, and it's about this kid. I'm in no way endorsing this because the kid's name is Tyler. But it's about this kid that is the son of a famous assassin, and he gets enrolled in what is literally an assassin school. It's where if you are an assassin, you're worried that your kids aren't going to get the right skills, you send them to this school. And they're all focused, there's five weapon clubs, and you choose your club and you develop, and it's things like blades is one, and exotic weapons is another, and staves is another, and so on and so forth.
So it's like Harry Potter for killers.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Perfect example.
All right.
And this book just really jumped out at me. The art is fantastic. Again, it's a writer-artist combination. Jimmy Robinson, I hadn't heard the name before, and really just leapt off the page to me. And it was good. It was very good. I'll put it to you this way. It's a five-issue series, and I read one issue, and I'm already sad that it's a five-issue series. And I hope that it continues on. Just very compelling. They did a really good job of making you instantly care about everything that was going on right out of the gate. It's a really cool concept. The school idea was cool. It's that nice mix of funny but also serious action going on at the same time. Just a really good book. With Image books, you very rarely can go wrong. If it's something that even you don't even think you'll like. Saga, for instance. When I saw Saga, I was like, there's no way I'm going
to. Oh, my God. So good.
And then started reading the book, and you couldn't stop. I couldn't stop reading the book. So it's one of those things where I don't know how they do it. I don't know what magic pool that they pull these things out of. But right. They always hit it right on the nail, and this was one of them. So if you like Image stuff, if you just like independent stuff, even though I still feel like they're too big to be called independent. But if you are into that kind of thing, check out this book. It's a cool book. It's not a huge investment. You're only going to have to worry about five issues, and I don't think you'll be disappointed.
All right, maybe I'll pick it up. It sounds intriguing.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a cool read.
All right. Well, now it's time for the section of the podcast where Tyler and I are going to rant and rave about, what's on our minds comic-wise. So I'm going to kick it off with a rant. This week, I'm going to pick on Uncanny Avengers. Now, I had planned to pick on Uncanny Avengers just for the unmitigated pile of crap that it's been for the last three issues. But everyone today is tweeting me saying, you need to pick up number four. It's great. But I feel like if I went back now and I picked it up, it would be like I was exhibiting signs of battered woman syndrome. Like, I just... I spent money on this thing 3 months in a row. Marvel told me, here's my flagship book. I'm going to put my best creative team on it, and this is going to be Marvel now. And we just had issue four show up. We're on like issue number 32 of X-Men, it feels like, already.
Yeah,
they're pushing those things out every 2 weeks. We're getting an Uncanny Avengers every month and a half, it seems. The art in the last book, I ragged on, the art in Daredevil, but dear God, I would take that in a heartbeat over the just dreck that's being pushed out in this high-priced book that just, it should be compelling. The Red Skull with Professor X's powers? Holy crap! How cool is that? And last issue, he stood on a, like a, I don't even know, like a vegetable crate in Times Square and got a mob of 20 whole people to get angry at some random mutants. Oh, noes. And the S-Men? Are you kidding? I was ragging on Stiltman. The S-Men? What in the hell were they thinking when they come up with these characters? I mean, it's straight out of just like bad Silver Age, just, it's Kirby villains without the heart of a Kirby comic. The dialogue is just utter crap. The villains are not compelling. The story that should be amazing, I just don't feel invested in it at all. And then the characterization of the characters makes no sense. I was like, oh, you know, Havoc, there's a cool character, doesn't get enough play, you know, especially in the post-AVX world. It makes sense that, you know, he would come to the forefront a little bit as kind of a foil to his brother. I was like, I'm down with that. But the way him and Captain America were bickering last issue, it didn't read like Cap. It didn't read like, dear God, and Wolverine in the book. Ugh, ew. Too many, you know, I like Wolverine as a character. He's just so overplayed right now. I just, done with him.
Just right now, always.
Yeah, I don't know.
I agree. I like Wolverine as well, but you can have too much of a guy. But, you know, let me tell you something, man. Don't
please tell me.
Don't pick up issue 4.
Did you read it?
I read it. Don't pick up issue 4.
Are people lying to me in the Twitterverse?
People are lying to you.
Because like Jay and Silent Bob, I will fly around the country and I will start punching people.
punch them because they're wrong. I couldn't. Normally, you and I don't agree on most things in comics. I could not agree with you more. Uncanny Avengers has been an unmitigated disaster, as far as I'm concerned. And this book, first of all, okay, the idea of Red Skull with Professor X's powers on paper, okay, yeah, it is kind of cool. But are you serious? Are you telling me that that's how mutant powers work? All I need to do is carve your brain out and duct tape it to mine, and now I have your powers? Bullshit. Hey. I hate that. Hey. There's not even room in there for that. Where is he putting that brain?
He's got that big frontal lobe from the skull. That's how he's drawn.
He's just a skull to begin with. That's a little to the bigger details. One, the thing about this book that absolutely kills me, and you started to touch on it, but I'm going to take it in a little bit more detail. I am a big Havoc fan. I'm a big fan of all things Summers. I love the whole goddamn family, except maybe Corsair, because, I mean, come on. But I Vulcan.
He's a space Alex. Pirate. How could you not?
I mean, yeah, but, like, I'm just thinking about the outfits. And his crew. But Vulcan, Alex, Scott, these are some of my favorite characters. Right. So, I mean, Scott is number 2 on my all-time favorite characters of all time list. So these are, I love the family and everything. I was incredibly excited for Alex to get his time in the sun. And just like every time that they go to give Alex his time in the sun, they then proceed to do nothing but embarrass him. His run during like the early thousands on X, when he was the leader of the X-Men, every single issue was him arguing with Bobby Drake about being qualified to be the leader and in all of that doing nothing but proving to us that he was not qualified to be the leader. Uncanny is exactly that. All I want in life, dude, is an issue of Uncanny Avengers that doesn't involve a conversation between Cap and Havoc where Cap tries to act like, no, it's your team, and Havoc doesn't go, Cap, you know, you can take over if you want to. Literally, it happens again in issue 4. Again. He sits down and says, you know, Cap, considering who we're dealing with, I'll understand if you want to take point on this. And Cap again has to say, no, this is your team. I'm always right when it comes to knowing if somebody's got what it takes, and you've got what it takes.
Every time I read a Captain America book now, I'm going to hear his voice like that. You have ruined Captain America for me forever. Thank you, Tyler. You jackass.
It's what's the point? I could understand doing it in issue 1. you get it started off, you do what you got to do. I don't know. It's just, it is what it is. I can't justify it. I can't justify it. I'm tired of that book. I'm tired of, and I'll give it another chance if it turns around, but where it is, I just can't do it.
All right. We'll take a deep cleansing breath there. Well, what about you? You kind of tacked on to my rant there a little bit, but I mean, what's angering you in the world of comics today, sir?
What's angering me is Superior Spider-Man, and
okay,
I preface that by saying I wasn't turned off to the idea of the Doc Ock Spidey. I really liked ASM 700. I actually even liked Superior Spider-Man number one, but every issue since, I feel, has taken two or three steps back. You put it best when we were talking before, Obi-Wan Parker. If you're gonna kill Peter Parker, you need to kill Peter Parker. You can't have this ghost memory of Peter Parker talking to us. And it's kind of like the idea that I can take Professor X's brain and duct tape it to my brain.
Right.
So X powers. It's the same kind of concept. I don't like it. I was down for something new and refreshing in the Spider-Man books, and I still have faith that this could become a cool thing. But right now, I'm very disappointed. And I mean, I took it off my pull list. Like, it's not what I was expecting. It's not what I enjoy. And I'm just really disappointed in the book.
So, I mean, I give Dan Slott credit for trying something different. Like, I wasn't on board with Amazing Spider-Man 700. I read it. I felt angry. I spent $8 on it. But I read it. It was an interesting idea. I mean, it's a character that... It's one of those characters that you just, it felt wrong to kill. Like, it's just, I get it. So he took a shot. I didn't agree with that shot, but I respect him for doing it. And he's taken, man, has that guy taken some criticism? And he's taken it like a champ, and he's taken it in good spirits and everything. But yeah, Obi-Wan Parker is the most ridiculous thing since Stiltman. I'm not down with it. I couldn't do it. I read ASM 700 and I read Spectacular Spider-Man number one, and when it got to that last scene, I checked out. And what I don't get about what they're doing with Spider-Man now is I don't even know how to refer to him. You know, Doc Ock Spidey or whatever you want to call him is showing up in every book now. Like, he's guest appeared in Daredevil. He's made a guest appearance in Journey into Mystery, of all things. Like, they're forcing this new version of Spider-Man out there. And I don't know. I'm sure there's some end game that they're planning, but I don't see it right now. And I'm not buying into it. I'm not buying that book.
I give all the respect in the world to Dan Slott for having the balls to do this, and I feel bad for him because, I mean, the man got freaking death threats over this. But at the same time, just because you're willing to go outside the box doesn't mean you're going in the right direction. And right now, I don't like the direction it's headed. It could absolutely get better, but right now, I kind of feel like it can't get much worse. And that's not what I was expecting, and I'm pretty disappointed.
So let's put a positive spin on things, and let me rave about something for a minute rather than ranting.
Take it away.
All right, man. So I want to talk about, and it came out a couple weeks ago. I'm kind of cheating here, but since it's our first issue of the podcast, I'm going to reach back, I think, 3 weeks instead of two, and talk about Boom Studios' new book called Fairy Quest. I don't know. Did you pick it up?
I did. You know what? I completely forgot.
Suck.
I know.
I think a lot of people, you know, Boom Studios, you know, it has a small audience, and this is a very niche book, but it's really fresh and different, and that's kind of what I gravitate towards now. It's kind of why I really like Saga so much, you know, same reason. It's so different than everything else that's out on the market right now. I mean, so Paul Jenkins is telling this really cool story. And it's in the first issue, it really sets the tone well. It really brings you into the world and helps you understand what's going on. Essentially, it takes place in Fable Wood, which is a place where fairy tale characters, they're forced to forever relive their stories over and over, kind of like Groundhog Day. Anytime someone in the real world picks up a book and reads the fairy tale, they have to act it out again in this weird, you know, world that's overseen by Mr. Grimm and his thought police. And there's these big brother signs like all over the towns they live in. Do not deviate. Stick with your story. You know, all this crazy, you know, crazy stuff going on. And the story focuses, you know, at first on Little Red Riding Hood and the Big Bad Wolf and the fact that they want to escape together to the real world, which is this place that they just only heard of in whispers. And, you know, they really lay it out well. You know, there's a scene in the book that I was giggling to myself, you know. It's kind of an AA meeting where, you know, it's a bunch of these characters and you recognize them all, you know, sitting around, and Cinderella's there. Hi, my name is Cinderella. I'm a fairy tale character and I want to escape to the real world. And they have to do this in secret, you know, and they have to stop. Oh, there's the thought police outside, like it's Nazi Germany. And Mr. Grimm has this memory erasing machine. When a character gets out of line, you know, they throw them in the thought machine and it wipes their slate clean and turns them into a zombie. So they just go back to going through the story over and over, over again. And all this is laid out in the first issue. Spectacularly done. And you mentioned him earlier in the podcast. So the art's done by Umberto Ramos, and it is some of his best work. I mean, it fits the subject matter perfectly. It's excellent. I don't want to spoil it anymore. I've already kind of laid out the groundwork of the universe. And I don't know if it's going to be an ongoing series or not. It was issue one of two, but I think that was for the sub story, which they, you know, I think it's going to be an ongoing story focusing on different characters within that world. But if you're up for something different, pick it up. And I think it's a great book. I think it's a great book for all ages. Like it almost has that same sort of a feel to like an old school Bugs Bunny cartoon, where there's a lot to it for kids, but there's a lot of subtext in it that the adults love as well. I think it's just a really good overall. Book. Highly recommend it.
Nice. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out. This time I'll remember. well, if we're going to talk positive, and it's a nice spinoff, it's basically the other side of the coin for me, going back to the big two, where Uncanny Avengers has done nothing but let me down, New Avengers has to be the most important book coming out of Marvel. New Avengers, which the only complaint I have about that book is that it should just be called the Illuminati. It shouldn't be called New Avengers.
We got to name everything Avengers.
Right. That's why it's shameless. Like it's because if you put out Illuminati number one, nobody would have bought it, you know,
right,
except for the people who realized what that meant. But this comic, there are issues of this comic that are essentially the entire thing is a handful of superheroes sitting around a table in a dark room talking. And it is riveting. It is unbelievably compelling. What these heroes are doing is so out of the normal spectrum of what superheroes do. And I mean, that's always been true of the Illuminati. I mean, sending, you know, they're the reason for so many things that have gone wrong, whether it be World War Hulk, whether it be, you know, anything that they've put their
right, right.
The inevitable crisis that comes from them with the Infinity Gems. I mean, maybe not now. If you've been reading the book, you know why I say that.
I do.
But you know it's coming. And if nothing else, they certainly caught Thanos' attention. I'm sure that's going to come back to harm them. Infinity. So, it's just, if you're not reading that book and you care about the Marvel Universe, you need to read that book, because you don't know what's happening in the Marvel Universe unless you're reading it.
And that's the cool thing about that book, is it's, you don't have to read that book and you have one view of the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. You read that book and you have an entirely new layer of understanding of what's going on. I almost didn't pick up that book because I hate Black Panther as a character, and I knew that he was going to be helming it. And I was like, man, I don't care about him at all. But everyone told me you need to pick it up. And I picked up issue one, and you're right, outstanding. It flies in the face of comic logic. Like, if you follow like the Stan Lee playbook of how a comic should be written, that misses every single mark. Mm-hmm. You know, at no point does the Vulture come in and try and steal away Aunt May. You know, it's but absolutely fascinating. I mean, again, and that's correct me if I'm wrong, that's Hickman writing, correct?
Yes, I believe it is. Yeah.
Anything Hickman touches right now, I think, is gold. I mean, he is at the top of his game.
Oh, absolutely.
It's fantastic. The art is good. And I really, as much as I didn't want to like the book, I love it.
Yeah. When a week comes where New Avengers comes out, that is a book where I'm like, I need to read that first. Because I feel like I won't know what's going on anywhere else unless I know what's going on there. And what they're dealing with is so huge. It's the end of the world as we know it. And no one else, no other Avenger, no X-Man, no whatever, Defender, no Guardian of the Galaxy, whoever you want to pick.
Right.
None of them know what's going on. And yet here, these guys are using the Infinity freaking Gauntlet, and still nobody knows what's happening. And it's just huge. And if you're not reading it, you're missing out on some of the best storytelling and some of the best behind-the-scenes Marvel Universe stuff, honestly, since S.H.I.E.L.D. and since, you know, the other Hickman gems that have come out over the years. Yeah, read this book. You need to read this book. It's just too good to miss.
So that wraps it up for the first issue of the Geek Legacy Comic Corner. Check back in 2 weeks for more comic news and reviews. Until then, you can catch me on the Twitter at TheMightyJerd. And you can find Tyler at...
@BatmanIncVP.
Excellent. As always, make sure to stop by GeekLegacy.com for all your comic, video game, and movie needs. With that said, thanks for listening, everyone. And go read some comics, you slackers. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Excelsior.